Hello, everybody. Welcome to this installment of Politatine. As always, I'm your host, Damien, joined by Varun. Be sure to stick to the end for some important updates and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
What is going on? We want to thank everyone for tuning in here. We're filming out in Texas. This is our third time trying to start the podcast. We're having a little bit of some connection issues. Varun's in Chicago. I'm out here in Texas. I'm in the middle of nowhere filming from a ranch in the back of my car. We're trying to make it work. We're trying to make it work for you guys. Hopefully, you guys do get this episode and we don't just have to scrap for today. Hopefully on Monday, again, it'll be a little bit easier, but, how are you doing, Varun? How's Chicago for the third time?
Third time, yeah. You know, it's been a struggle today, and we're working through it as we go, but, you know, Damien, Chicago is great. I'm with family, and I'm enjoying the time that we have here, even with the coronavirus, with a very, very stringent lockdown here in Chicago. It's a good time. You know, it's natural, it's peaceful, it's a good place to film our podcast. How about you, Damien?
Yeah, no, I think I'm having a little bit of the opposite situation with filming the podcast out here. I'm having to use a hotspot that has LTE, and the LTE is low. So hopefully for Monday's podcast, I'll be back in the city. I won't be out here in the ranch, and we'll be able to get some better connection. But no, besides that, I mean, it's good because, you know, you don't have that good connection. You're not necessarily paying attention to social media and stuff like that. You're out here, you're peaceful, you're on your land, you're sleeping, you know, the stars, there's no pollution, you can see everything. It's something that you enjoy. You forget about everything else that's going on in the world. You forget that there's a lockdown. I'm personally enjoying it. Let's hop into today's episode again for the third time. What's our starting topic here, Varun?
First of all, salute to Damien. He's a soldier for being in the back of his car with a hotspot and filming today's podcast. But as we go forward, we're going to begin today's podcast on a very high note. Is that Trump released very, very recently a new set of policies to Fox News, and he talked about how chokeholds should not be used in the police departments across the nation. He even told Fox News that it's a good thing if police chokeholds were banned across the nation, and many Republicans in Congress agree with President Trump's vision and are saying, especially United States Senator Tim Scott, are saying that Democratic policies to ban chokeholds are a good thing for our nation and going back on their earlier policies with regards to police regulation. How do you feel about the Republicans and Trump especially kind of working towards a ban on chokeholds when compared to previous policies?
Well, you know, I think that it's good that it's something that's, you know, happening bipartisan, in a bipartisan matter. I think that's really nice to see. It's kind of relaxing, it's kind of a breath of fresh air to be able to see that something's happening in a bipartisan matter. But I don't think that Trump's doing it necessarily as a ploy. I think that really this is something that they've agreed upon and something that they think that is necessary in order to proceed in our nation. But I don't think that it's necessarily the right steps, as I was saying in one of our earlier filmings. I think that chokeholds, in my opinion, they're a good mechanism for suppressing an attacker, and they're something that I think police officers should have in their arsenal. But I think that the issue is that police officers aren't being trained on how to use them. I mean, if they were using them in a matter such as jiu-jitsu, then you wouldn't have seen you know, what happened with George Floyd. That's completely frowned upon in jiu-jitsu, putting your knee on someone's neck. I think that they need to be more trained and that they need to be able to use these martial arts or these techniques to suppress people properly. But if they're going to pass it bipartisan and you have experts saying that that it's a good decision, then obviously, you know, that's something that's up to the people up in Washington. But no, it's nice to see that at least it's something that's bipartisan. I don't think that it's the solution, though. I think that we need to, you know, try to invest more in our inner cities, in our lower population areas, as we were talking about last time with Will Carroll, and really take steps forward to uplifting those people who have been left behind due to our prior actions and years past.
I have to agree on that point. It's not the end-all, be-all solution for that issue, but I think it does show that, you know, the Republicans are trying to take notice of the protests across the nation, because Trump previously was focusing mostly on Antifa and having these threats across the nation with the protests and unruly protesters, and now he's focusing upon the real issues at hand, which is acknowledging police brutality. I think it really shows that our president is somewhat mature in understanding the circumstance, and I do commend him for doing something about the issue in the Republican Party in and of itself. I think I wanted to bring the point towards something that he said later on in that segment. He actually proposed an executive order to actually increase capital for minority-owned small business and do the exact opposite of defunding the police and promise to put extra money in officer training and equipment. How do you feel about Trump doing the exact opposite of what protesters are crying for, defunding the police and promising to, you know, work towards more money put into officer training? And it's obviously a policy that I actually support. But how do you feel about that, Damien?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the cry, you know, protesters have been having the cry to defund police, and I've been having the cry to fund police correctly instead of defunding them. I think that it's the right move. I really agree with this. I like that the steps that are being taken by the president. That's not usually something that'll come out of my mouth, but in this circumstance, it is. I'm happy that he's going to invest in training. I don't necessarily agree in investing in equipment, but in training, I think that it's the proper use of police funds. You know, it depends on what equipment, obviously. I don't think that they should be buying any more tanks or any more rubber bullets or any more militarized kind of ideology, technology. But beyond that, I think that it's good. I think that we need to invest in training. We need to have these police officers, you know, higher trained, and they need to be higher paid because they're, you know, protecting us. And hopefully that's what they're supposed to do. Okay.
You're good now.
You got me?
Got you. I got you loud and clear now. I have to agree with you on that point, and I think that you know, defunding the police is not the solution, but also militarizing equipment is not the option in this circumstance. I do think, Damien, that rubber bullets might help out with the law enforcement objectives because those aren't lethal force, are more expensive than regular bullets. So I do see where that is coming from, extra funding for equipment. But that's my standpoint. But I do want to kind of step back, Damien, and readdress my point that I brought up on the last episode. I did really, really support defunding the police in some circumstances, bringing up the NYPD and how they have $10 billion in equipment every single year. I think that I have revised my stance. I mean, and for one very specific reason, it is because the effects of defunding the police are not the best look for America. It shows our nation as being not a civilized nation that we kind of mentioned our nation to be. So I'm going to walk you through some scenarios. I think this is what I think, and this is what many people have predicted in our nation, if we do defund the police and take more officers off the streets. What Minneapolis did. If they don't have a police department anymore as of a couple of days ago, I think that what's going to happen is one of two circumstances. One, the county sheriff's department or the state police or the federal police even will come in and take their position. It's not good for the Minneapolis city because their people are not doing anything to kind of regulate these higher authorities. No, it's not the community doing policing, but it is the county and the state, which is not taking in the wishes of the Minneapolis people. And if that doesn't happen, I mean, we're going to have a situation like Mexico, where in Mexico we have vigilante groups called the Alto Defensas, who is coming out and acting as gangs, and they're not really doing policing per se, they're doing the exact opposite, taking unruly taxes upon the people and not really being supported by the government. I think that it shows, first of all, that we're not unified as a nation, and it's not the solution, Damien. What do you think about defunding the police?
Yeah, again, I think that we need to refund the police and we need to rebudget the police as opposed to taking money away from them. I think that police officers should be paid more. I think that that's something that the majority of America agrees upon. I think that there needs to be different task force and police officers and different training for different situations. You know, I don't necessarily know if you should if you should defund the police because, again, like you're saying, it's gonna put more pressure on citizens. It's going to put more pressure on these vigilante groups, and that's not what you want. You always want to have, you know, the government doing its function, which is serving the people, and if it can't serve and protect the people, you know, serve and protect, you know, you have to be protecting the people. That's of utmost importance, but if you can't be protecting the people, then the people are going to look elsewhere for protection, and that's not something that I think that we would want in the United States. I think that we want the government definitely, you know, providing us with the protection, and if we see a turn away from that, I think that it could be catastrophic.
I have to agree on that standpoint. I think that, looking at the policies of defunding the police, defunding the police in places like this creates a huge, huge, huge vacuum that shows that our nation is not as modernized, as societally advanced as people believe us to be. So I think it creates a vulnerability for our entire nation, as a whole on that standpoint. But I did want to mention, Damien, and we talked about this earlier today, how Trump promised, along with his earlier promises that I mentioned, to increase the confront the healthcare needs, sorry, for communities of color. And this comes at a contradictory Trump because he actually rolled back a bunch of the policies Obama had to make sure Americans were insured for healthcare expenses. How do you feel about Trump going back on his original policies? And I guess first, let's introduce the topic of communities of color, POCs, how they're not being represented in the healthcare industry. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, I think coronavirus and the pandemic that we're in right now really just attested to the fact that, they're not being represented or they're not being treated fairly in the healthcare system. We had the whole discussion with Will Carroll last time about white privilege and so on. But I think you can't deny the fact that 60% of the deaths in Georgia being African Americans, while they're only, I think, around 15% of the population. It's something that's catastrophic, and it's something that has to be looked at. You can't just ignore that. I mean, the majority of deaths, and then on top of that, you had, I think, another 20% being Hispanics. I don't think that necessarily they've been treated fairly by the healthcare system. I think that it's a good thing that Trump is doing. I think that, regardless of whether he's going against what his earlier mission was, I think earlier in his presidency, he was trying to just destroy Obama's legacy. But fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, he hasn't been able to do that, and he's having to go back on it and even rebuild a little bit of Obama's legacy. I don't know if he's going to take credit for it. I don't know what's going to happen here, but I'm just happy, regardless of who's going to get the admiration for it, that something's happening in America and that people of color are going to be treated at least a little bit more fairly in theory.
You brought up a very good point about people of color not being treated fairly in the healthcare industry. We're seeing in lower performing hospitals are actually serving more higher percentages of minority patients. And the real issue here, Damien, is not because they're actually serving these patients, but that they have higher overall expenditure rates for these patients. So they're lower quality. They're not good hospitals. They're serving these patients, but charging them more than the good hospitals that are elsewhere. I think that it calls for a reform on a national level for all of our hospitals. And I think that's what Trump should be targeting in his overall economic policy and healthcare policy with his executive order, which is coming out soon enough. I think it goes to say, Damien, that Obama did a lot for these people who are uninsured POCs. We see many, many Black and Hispanic people and minorities not being insured by the agencies that we're insured by. You and I, being people who live in a very high-income community, we're insured, obviously, but these people don't have health care insurance. And Obama introduced so many policies to kind of take down deductibles and pay insurance companies to take down deductibles. Trump has reversed almost every single one of these policies. But for him to be coming out and saying, I want to implement more policies to do this, first of all, strikes me as contradictory, but second of all, strikes me as looking back on his previous actions and saying, no, they weren't the right actions, and I need to take accountability for the American people and introduce the real reform in the healthcare industry.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm going to make a couple points here, but first of all, I hope that this is a sign of Trump maturing and that he's going to take a leadership role as he should be in America. I don't think it's a question of a lot of people were asking, can Trump be a leader? He has to be. So hopefully this is a sign of that. Second of all, I'm happy to see that, this is the change that's being made in America. I think that it's long overdue. We need to rebuild not only our healthcare system to better suit all Americans. We need to rebuild our justice system to better suit all Americans. We need to rebuild our education system to better suit all Americans. There's a lot of change that needs to be done in America, and I hope that these are only the first steps in a long list of things that need to change and being crossed off. slowly but surely. Now, I want to talk about a little bit, you know, I've been talking about, we're talking about Obama here and what Obama did in his presidency and such. You know, obviously you had the First Lady, and I talked about it a couple episodes ago, where I've been a strong believer in this whole vitamin D thing, where the majority of people that were suffering from coronavirus or were in ICU or were dying had a vitamin D deficiency, and it was a very strong correlation. And you know, now I'm now that I'm off Twitter, my mom's telling me that that a lot of people are talking about that, about the vitamin D deficiency being a strong correlation, and that more people are beginning to talk about it. And all I can say, I guess, is that it's small. I told you so to anyone that wasn't really believing me with the whole vitamin D stuff. But I think that that's something that also needs to be looked at. You know, you had Michelle Obama's programs to be more fit and to be more physically active, and you had her you know, eating healthier, and you really had Play 60 being brought up with Obama's presidency. And I think that that's something that we need to advocate for. We need to try to be healthier as Americans. So hopefully he can kind of bring back some of Michelle Obama's policies too, not only just Barack's.
I think it is more needed now than ever, Damien, because as we're looking at online and on the news everywhere, I've been looking at the same things that you were looking at and going, you know, Damien was right. But Damien was completely right in saying that the vitamin D related to the coronavirus and rising coronavirus rates. But also looking at this, obesity is also linked to high levels of vitamin D deficiencies. I think we should also be bringing back a lot of our policies to decrease the amount of obesity in our nation, whether it's on a school-wide level or on a nationwide level with her fit programs. And I think we should also be encouraging going out in the light, in the sun, enjoying your days as you are in Texas. You know, you're outside and on a farm. That's the goal for Americans, to get that vitamin D, to go outside and to be active. But you know, Damien, it's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard to be fit, and it's hard to receive that sunlight and that active atmosphere now more than ever, because the coronavirus is kind of taking over and not allowing people to go outside, and a lot of people are at home paranoid about going outside. What do you have to say for those Americans who are sitting indoors and not really comfortable with going outside and exposing themselves?
Well, you know, I think that it's time for Americans to put on a mask. I think that this is something that I've been advocating a lot. I think it was in Czech Republic, I think they wore masks for 3 weeks. It was mandatory that you wear a mask wherever you go for 3 weeks. And they had almost all their coronavirus cases drop because, you know, obviously with masks, you're not protecting yourself, you're more protecting everyone else. So it's kind of a courtesy thing. I think that everyone needs to go outside and they need to start wearing their masks, and they need to keep their social distance. But you need to try to get outside. You need to try to be physically active, or if you're stuck inside, you need to find a way to be physically active. You need to really, really focus on making sure that you're eating healthy and that you're eating the right things. I know it's easier right now to get, I call it like bored hungry, or to be bored munching, where you're just eating because you're bored. You know, you don't have anything to do, so you start to stuff your mouth, see how many snacks you can fit in there. But I think that that's something that we need to push away from. We need to try to be a lot healthier. I think that we definitely need to go outside. We need to all respect each other. I know that it's difficult here in America, but I think that that's the only way that we're going to be able to move forward. We need to have common courtesy for our fellow citizens and for our fellow inhabitants in this great country.
And you bring up a really good point on your last thing, having respect for our fellow Americans. It comes with saying that masks are not only to protect yourself from the virus, right? Also to protect everybody else who's around you from getting the virus if you do have it. I think it goes to say common courtesy also includes holding a mask, having a mask on at all times. And I was actually researching, because I'm in Chicago right now, but I'm a native for Georgia, and I live in Georgia currently. I was looking at the Mall of Georgia and how it opened up earlier this month and how the coronavirus situation has been. I was looking at an article which said that nearly 10% of people are wearing masks in the Mall of Georgia, even though it's required for people coming into the mall to wear a mask. And I was surprised, you know, Damien, because there's people there who monitor that and look at people wearing masks, and they're not doing anything about it. So masks are the number one way, as you know, to rid people of the coronavirus and to stop the spread of that virus and to flatten the curve. So how can we be better on a corporate level, on a nationwide level, on an individual level, to encourage people to wear masks, keep themselves and other people around them safe, hold that accountability?
You know, I think that in America, I think a lot of people have an issue with I guess, I don't know if it would be pride or if it would be ignorance, as I talked about on my solo episodes a couple nights ago, but I think it's an issue with one or the other, where it's just, if they wear a mask, they feel like they're not manly, or they wear a mask, they feel embarrassed or something. I think that it's ridiculous. You know, I don't necessarily know how to proceed forward. I think it comes with leadership. I think that seeing Donald Trump not wear a mask, you know, might encourage a lot of people to not wear masks. And if we're seeing players like LeBron James coming out and saying to wear a mask, or we're seeing public figures come out, singers and actors and rappers, musicians, and obviously our politicians, our leaders coming out and saying, please wear a mask, you know, be an American, and we kind of Americanize it. I think that might be the best way to proceed, to say that that you're doing a service to your country by wearing a mask, and really kind of, I guess, hype up the idea of wearing a mask and say that it's patriotic almost. But it's kind of hard to do that when you have the president saying that he doesn't wear a mask. It's childish. I think that a lot of people have an issue with it because, again, they feel like it's immature. You know, I'm not perfect. I do have an issue, you know, a little bit wearing a mask. I do feel a little bit silly. I don't know if we'd have to return to school and, you know, I'd have to wear a mask. It would feel a little bit silly, but feeling a little bit silly is okay when you're protecting, you know, your friends, and you're protecting your brothers and sisters.
And as you said, President Trump is not wearing a mask. I shook my head, because that's how I felt when I saw him not wearing a mask. I was like, look, one thing for me, all right, Damien, not to wear a mask, but it's one thing for the leader of our free world to not wear a mask when this pandemic going around. And, you know, people asked him, they were like, why weren't you wearing a mask? And he's like, no, it's completely fine because I have testing going on every single day.
Yeah, no, I think, and then another issue that I have is that a lot of people on both sides, they pull like a, so what, he's not doing it. You know, it's like childish. It's like, I think that Donald Trump is excused a lot, and that they'll say, well, this other person's doing it, why can't Donald Trump do it? Or this other person's saying that, why can't Donald Trump say it? I think that they kind of ignore the fact that he's the leader of the free world. I think that you can't be excusing the leader of the nation just because some other American's doing it. This is the guy that's supposed to be looked up to by everyone. You know, his actions are going to be replicated. You had in the Obama presidency, you know, you had a kid say that he was happy because the president had hair like his. It's representation, it's leadership, it's the small things that you kind of overlook, and that's one of them. I mean, you have interviews with citizens where they're saying, I'm not wearing a mask because the president's not wearing a mask, and it needs to be something that he needs to take more of a leader stance on. It's a time that we need leaders, and I think that we're seeing who our true leaders are, and, you know, that goes on both sides of the aisle. I think that we're seeing Mitt Romney come out as a true leader on one side, and we're seeing, you know, I think that, you know, you have a lot of Democratic, unfortunately, I don't like to say it, but you're having a lot of Democrats that are coming out as leaders in the sense of maturity, as opposed to their Republican counterparts.
And on the topic of Democrats, I was actually going through a bunch of Republican articles and Republican publications earlier today on Twitter and on the news. I was looking at how Democrats are kind of attacking the policing forces, trying to reform the police now because the citizens are coming out and saying, you know, it's not okay for police expressing brutality. But, you know, when you saw a couple of years ago under the Comey administration for the FBI, they conducted a lot of kind of dirty actions with FBI agents spying on the president's campaign, now president's campaign, things like that. And I think it's overlooked how much went into that FBI investigation, how much kind of treason on some sides, because I'm taking a kind of right-wing stance right here, but the Democrats stayed quiet, right? And now they're coming out and saying, you know, the police are being brutal and they're being unjust. But back then they were doing the exact same thing and they were getting the Democrats' support. So do you have any stances on what happened back then and what's happening now?
You know, it's something that I have to look into a little bit more. I think that, you know, again, I don't think that it's either side should be staying quiet, or I think that we need to speak out on issues and we need to address them as Americans first. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's because of the Trump presidency or if it's kind of a political pattern that's happening here. I'm seeing something that I'm very strong against, which is where you bring in, you know, your politics as a personality trait. You know, you say when someone asks, tell me a little bit about yourself, you say that you're Republican or Democrat. I don't think that should be one of the first things that you mention. I think that you should mention that you're kind, that that you're you know, supportive, you're caring. I think that that needs to be stuff that's dropped. I don't think that you should be playing emotional politics either. I don't think that you should tie your personality in with your politics. I think that it's dangerous, and I think that that's something that we've seen happen a lot more in America, where we're kind of saying your politics come before anything, and you're really defined by your politics, unfortunately. So I think that we need to stop doing that. I think that we just need to try to do what's right. Obviously, there's always going to be arguments on what's right. But as we saw with Will Carroll on the last episode, we can have a conversation. We can come to common ground, and we can try to, you know, give a little bit here and give a little bit there instead of arguing.
I think it's a very, very valid point, Damien. I completely agree. And upon your point, I know we're both big listeners in his podcasts and his speeches online. And it really reminded me what you said with what Daryl Davis did, a long time ago. He converted a bunch of KKK members, 200 exactly KKK members, to drop their robes and become normal citizens, inclusive of the black community. I think that these members, being a part of the KKK, this kind of racially unjust group, didn't really explore the side of themselves that was towards acceptance.
Yeah.
Goodness. And I think that once you break those boundaries and hit them head on, we really can come to bipartisan conclusions. I think that a lot of people are being clouded by this political judgment and being on the side of your own Democratic or Republican party and not really looking past it and saying, who am I as a person? Yeah. Daryl Davis forced these KKK members to say, who am I as a person, and forced them to look into themselves. And I'm saying this because I'm just reading his book right now, but he forced them to look within themselves inside instead of looking to their groups inside. How do you feel about what Daryl Davis did as compared to our political stage today?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what you need to do. You need to ask, you know, not what are your politics, but who are you as a person? What are you really looking for here? Why are you looking to achieve these different things? You know, ask the whys. Are you just doing this because all the other Republicans are doing this? Are you just doing it because all the other Democrats are doing it? Or are you doing it because you really think that it's the best thing to be done? And I think when you ask those questions, you kind of begin throwing out, you know, the stuff that you're just doing just because, and you start doing stuff that you think really matters, and you can change someone's whole perspective on the world, change their whole perspective on an entire race when you start asking them why they're thinking the way that they're thinking, and start to have a conversation and you know, just calm down and really throw aside the politics for a second and have a conversation with the person and not a politician.
I completely agree. I think everything is made to be along political lines today, when a lot of the issues that we're facing today, if not all the issues that we're facing today, are moral issues, mm-hmm. issues that we have to face as Americans and not as Democrats or Republicans. I mention it almost every single episode. We're forced to mention it almost every single episode that we are all Americans. All of our listeners here are Americans, unless we have people from other countries, obviously. But most of our listeners are Americans here today. And it's a very, very valid point that we're leading into here today. I did want to mention, Damien, I'm a big fan of basketball. As you know, I played basketball for a long, long time.
Yeah, very good at it.
Kyrie Irving. Go ahead.
Very good at it. You're very good at basketball.
Thank you, man. But upon that point, I wanted to mention now Kyrie Irving, an NBA player, if you don't know, he kind of introduced a policy to the NBA League of Commissioners earlier this week, and he said that he's organizing a call with a bunch of his fellow players this Friday to kind of lay light upon the racial tensions that have been going on in our nation and maybe postpone the NBA's starting to later on in the year because of racial tensions going on. So how do you feel about this? Is also a very, very late instance of athletes taking a stance in political instances and integrating that with sports. But how do you feel about this athlete in particular taking that stance upon the issues that we're facing today in the NBA reopening?
You know, I think that it's good. You know, people have been asking for peaceful protests, but unfortunately, you know, you've seen circumstances of peaceful protests and sports going bad. I think that it's, you know, Kyrie Irving, popular flat earther, beyond his beliefs on politics, you know, he gets made fun of a lot for that. But I think that it's good. I think that he's using his platform correctly. Hopefully he doesn't face repercussions. And it's something that's, I think, a little bit sad, personally, in America, that you should face repercussions for exercising your First Amendment. You know, obviously we saw Colin Kaepernick face extreme repercussions and lose the game that he loves because he decided to take a stand for something that he loved a little bit more, which was his community and his culture, his ethnicity, his sense of a of being a human being. You know, he valued that more than football, and you know, it was an incredible act. I don't know necessarily if that was his intention, if his intention, or if he expected that to necessarily be blackballed from the NFL. But I think that it's time that players stop being afraid. I know that it's a very hard stance to take, but hopefully Colin Kaepernick, I you know, anytime that we see these players, you have to think of Colin Kaepernick, and hopefully he paved the way. Hopefully he took the majority of the body blows and allowed for these future players to come out and take knees with the national, or for the national anthem, and to protest, you know, opening up the seasons until we see representation being fair in America, and people of color being treated equally. You know, unfortunately, you know, he did have to take those blows, and he did lose years off of his career. And but you know, I think that at the end he might say that it's all worth it if he really paved the way for other players to be able to exercise their First Amendment.
Absolutely. And upon your point about Colin Kaepernick, I'm excited to announce that Seahawks coach Pete Carroll announced today that Colin Kaepernick might be getting a shot back in the NFL, because one team seems to be very, very interested in that team. Now, he didn't go on to name that team, obviously. All over Twitter, I've been seeing Colin Kaepernick sign Colin Kaepernick. And it goes to show, you know, Damien, that Americans love Colin Kaepernick. A lot of Americans do. They respect him for his actions. And I think we're ready to embrace that player back into the NFL. He'll receive a bunch of backlash, obviously, by our administration and NFL players around the scope. But I think it shows a lot that NFL teams are willing to bring back Colin Kaepernick into their stands and with their audiences. He's a very controversial player today, but I think it shows a lot about our nation, our fabric. We're more than politics. We're about, you know, cultivating people and enjoying a good atmosphere no matter where we're at. So I think upon Colin Kaepernick's stance, I respect him so much as a player, and I think it's time for America to understand that he was exercising his First Amendment rights, and he has every right in the world to do so. So that is my stance upon it. I think it is absolutely his right, and no matter what he stood for or what he believes in, I think he has a right to express it, as does Drew Brees,
Yes, that's what I was going to anybody. Mention. Yeah, go ahead.
So Drew Brees did, you know, bring forth a very controversial argument, which obviously, as I discussed in the last episode, he apologized for after and threw a lot of shade at President Trump. But I think he received a lot of backlash for his actions, which were not completely vindicated. I think that Drew Brees was simply saying what he thought about the flag. And in some perspectives, I don't think that it was a completely wrong thing to say.
I think
we shouldn't have backed
time. I think it was wrong time. Yeah, wrong time for sure.
Go ahead, what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just going to say that you know, I agree with you completely on the fact that Drew Brees and all other players should really be able to exercise their First Amendment right. I think that they're going to face backlash as players, but I don't think that they should ever be blackballed. I think that, you know, in the case of Drew Brees, he's always been a very staunch Republican. He's always come out and said that he puts, you know, his family and God first, and that's I mean, that's okay. I really have no issue with that at all. I think that the only issue that I have was that he was overlooking, you know, this huge political movement. And unfortunately, I think the issue really was that it was Drew Brees saying it. And because, you know, he's obviously done amazing things for the community in New Orleans. And it was kind of like, it was kind of a something that you didn't expect, because it was Drew saying it. You know, I've always looked up to Drew as not only a player. You know, I'm a Falcons fan, so I hate him as an athlete because he's good. But I've always looked up to him as a player, because of the way that he carries himself on and off the field. And I think that it was a slip up, and I think that obviously, you know, he's taking the proper course of action. You know, he's talking to African American athletes in the league, and he's talking to retired African American athletes, and he's trying to make his wrongs right, and he's trying to look how he can be more politically aware. And I think that he reacted quickly. It was kind of a wake up call, and I think that if he's being sincere, which I honestly believe that he is, that he shouldn't face repercussions for his actions. I think, you know, I was talking to someone earlier today, and I was wondering if he would be able to regain that leadership stance in the locker room, because, you know, that might be a little bit challenging. But I think that he's taking the proper course of action, and that we'll see on the Saints doing a hopefully bad, but I expect for them to be doing decent within the season with Drew behind the or Drew throwing the ball out there.
Damien, and upon your earlier point, apparently they had a very, very positive meeting. I'm looking to it right now. The Saints and their players and Drew Brees about the issues that he's faced as an athlete and his viewpoints, and they had a very positive discussion. Hopefully, he's back to his stance with his teammates. I do believe that Drew Brees, it goes to mention that he did kneel for the anthem a couple years ago with his teammates, obviously reversing his stance. But it goes to say that he's a very, very vocal person. It's a very, very hard thing to go kneel for the anthem, especially in times like we had a couple of years ago with Colin Kaepernick and a bunch of people calling him out for kneeling for the anthem. But I think that, Damien, upon your earlier point, I wanted to bring up one specific thing. I think that a lot of the Saints players that came out and said Drew Brees is a terrible person, I've lost him as a friend and things like these, they should have been calling Drew Brees up, going to the media and going to Twitter and saying, you know, Drew, I don't support what you did, asking him, you know, Drew, why did you say these kinds of things? Have any backing for what you said? I think that what he said did have some vindication in his own mind, and people should be willing to listen to Drew Brees' point of view instead of just backlashing him and just saying the wrong thing. And you didn't respect the African American community. I think we should go ahead and ask him and say, why did you do it? And have a healthy discussion as we're having right now. And we have with Will Carroll a couple of days ago about why he did it.
Yeah, no. I mean, in his eyes, he had father or grandfathers that fought in the Second World War, and you know, African Americans came out and said, "Hey, man, I had grandfathers that fought in the Second World War too, but unfortunately, when they came home, they didn't get to have that freedom that your grandfather had. They came home, you know, you had African Americans unfortunately coming home from World War II after fighting in segregated troop you know groups." They were segregated battalions and all of that, and they came home, and if they were seen with their uniforms in certain circumstances, they'd be beaten half to death. They weren't seen as true American heroes, whereas as white soldiers were. And I don't know if a lot of people know that, and I don't know if Drew knew that, and that's a conversation that you have to have. You have to say, you know, Drew, I see what you're saying. I see that you respect the flag and that you love, you know, your country and you love God, but let me tell you about it from my perspective. And I think that sharing perspectives, and that's what we intend to do with Politi, and sharing perspectives, understanding different points of view is the way to proceed forward. Because I mean, it's personally something that I didn't know, and maybe I could look at being in Drew's position and having someone that fought in the Second World War and agreeing with him or even taking the same stance as him, because I was ignorant to the fact that, you know, you had African Americans coming home and not being seen as heroes. Obviously, I knew that they weren't treated fairly, but it's not a perspective that I had. Whereas you know, now you have athletes coming out and saying that their grandfathers fought, but that they didn't get the same validation or the same freedom that Drew Brees' fathers got and that or grandfathers got, and that's something that you need to have, and you need to have a conversation with him, and you need to tell him, hey man, this is how I'm looking at it, and this is why I kneel. I get what you're saying in a sense, but look at it from this way. Try to have a conversation with me. Do you get what I'm saying? And I think that that's what we should have done with Colin Kaepernick, and I think that that's what we should do with all athletes, that a conversation should be created. And I'm glad Drew at least tried using his platform as an athlete. He used it incorrectly, I think, for the time being, but hopefully he learns from it, and hopefully he grows from it, and I think that he will.
Absolutely, 100% agree. I think no matter how we see our policies and our perspectives, you shouldn't have to apologize. As we said, Drew Brees' wife also apologized on his behalf. We shouldn't have us and our wives apologize for a viewpoint we've been having and we have certain vindication for in our own minds. I think that it goes to say that the American people are sometimes very toxic with regards to different viewpoints that we have in our nation. I think we should be very, very inclusive no matter what the viewpoint is. And I think that we should discuss everything with people because, for example, Daryl Davis was friends with a bunch of KKK people again. Daryl Davis came out and instead of bashing them and saying, I don't want to talk to you, I hate you, I don't want you to be my friend, you're part of the KKK, you hate black people. No, he sat in a car with them, took a car ride with them, enjoyed these conversations. And he was like, you know, why do you think black people are inferior? And they told him why. And he's like, here's what I think. Because of these conversations that he had with these people, him befriending these people exactly, it changed their viewpoints. I think that the change in America is not going to be caused by us saying, you know, Drew Brees apologized. Drew Brees' wife apologized. We're supposed to be saying, Drew Brees, let's have a conversation.
Yeah, well, I think that it has to be the substance of the apology. I think that apologies can be appropriate in certain circumstances. If you were ignorant to a different point of view, where you come out and say, you know, hey, I'm sorry for what I said because I wasn't aware that African Americans went and fought in the Second World War and that they were beat for it and that they were, you know, dehumanized when they came back home and that they didn't experience the same privileges and the same freedoms that my grandfathers did. I'm sorry for my ignorance as onto that subject. I don't think that you should just apologize for your stance if you don't see it being wrong. You know, if Drew would have been, you know, completely right, or if he would have said, I don't know, I'm gonna throw out a crazy example here, you know, something about he thinks Wendy's is better than McDonald's. He shouldn't have to go out and apologize for a viewpoint that he has if there's no really strong stand. Maybe he can come out the next day and say, you know, I'm sorry, I was ignorant to the fact that that McDonald's did 100% beef and Wendy's did something else, or you know, he can apologize for his ignorance onto, or I guess his lack of knowledge onto something that can change his viewpoint. But I don't think that you should necessarily apologize for something that you said if you really do believe it.
Absolutely. I think that we shouldn't force apologies, mm-hmm. but I think apologies are a good thing for our nation. We should recognize our mistakes and assume responsibility for our mistakes. I think that also in some circumstances, our president, Mr. Donald Trump, should responsibility for his own messages that he distributes via social media and verbally. Because as we're seeing today, Damien, I don't know if you've seen this yet, but yesterday, Republican Party took a platform, which is exactly the same thing as they took in 2016, meaning that they have 40-plus references condemning the current president, which now is Trump, but back then was Obama. I don't know if you get what I'm saying, but they're completely condemning the Trump presidency as a threat to the internet, a threat to the people, and a threat to our democracy. I don't know how this is possible in our nation today, but I think that a lot of people are understanding that Trump is not the right person for the post on both sides of the spectrum, and goes to show that the American people are acting as one, condemning our president. And as we've said before, we need to have a united stance. How do you feel about what the Republican Party is doing?
Yeah, you know, I think that, again, it needs to go back. I think that this is hopefully, I was mentioning that Donald Trump's hopefully taking steps to maturity. I think that hopefully this is a sign that our nation's doing the same thing, that we're taking steps to maturity and we're starting to stand up for what we believe as opposed to what our party believes. You know, I watch a YouTuber. I think it's View the Fifth Column. That's his channel on YouTube. I highly recommend it. He has some really, really interesting perspectives on issues. But he once said something along the lines of that he doesn't endorse a politician because there's no politician that shares his exact viewpoints. And I think that it was very interesting. I didn't understand it at first, but as he went on explaining it, what he was basically saying was that he endorses policies that he agrees with. He'll never be able to endorse a politician because no politician is perfect in his eye, because no politician necessarily has all the policies that he agrees with. So he says that people shouldn't necessarily be endorsing politicians, but rather their policies, and be endorsing things that they do agree with about the politician, and making a decision on the stances, on the policies that they have, as opposed to making a decision on the letter that's next to their name, whether that be a D or an R.
I completely agree. And on that stance, Damien, I think that a lot of times people vote for delegates and congresswomen and congressmen or our president himself because they don't really look into the policies that our politicians are advertising, but they look into their names, their parties. And we should be focusing not only on the Republican and Democratic tag or brand name attached to our politicians, but also the content of what they're doing. You know, when we're shopping for clothes, shopping for books, we look at the brand sometimes. We look at if it's Nike, if it's Under Armour, if it's Adidas for sports clothes. But we also look at how the clothes. I think we as Americans should stop focusing upon the brand name, focusing upon what the politician is fighting for. A lot of times, Republicans are very, very centrist and not fighting for the exact policies their party is pushing forth. And a lot of Democrats are not as radical as people believe them to be. So I think looking in deeper into what politicians are as people and asking those essential questions of who are you, what are you pushing forth, the way that we move forward as a nation.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you. I think that it's good that we're looking at stuff beyond politics, and we're really looking at policies here, and well, I guess beyond politics in the sense of left or right or Democrat or Republican. I think that it's good that we're looking at what we agree with as people. I think that in certain circumstances, I have liberal views. Obviously, that's why I consider myself a centrist. I have liberal views for some things and conservative views for others. I think that that's how most Americans should be. I don't think that anyone should really consider themselves Democrat or Republican. They should consider themselves an American first. I think that they should just say that that they're centrist, that they're going to vote for whoever they believe is right. You know, obviously you have some people that they'll always vote Republican and they'll vote Republican even if they don't necessarily agree with the politician just because he is a Republican. And then on the other hand, you'll have people that will always vote Republican because they genuinely always like the Republican candidate. And there needs to be a difference there. There needs to be a strong difference there, whether you're voting because you actually agree with what the candidate wants to do and you agree with his policies, or you're voting for him because he's a Democrat or he's a Republican. I think that we're taking good changes here in America. I think that we're taking the proper steps forward. I'm not really up to date, you know, with too much news, but I think that we're still out here protesting. I think that we're still out here wanting change. I hope that it doesn't die down and that it goes from protests in the streets to legislation on paper.
I absolutely agree with your standpoint on that, Damien. I think it's important for us to look past these political hashtags and looking into the exact policies of politicians. I also believe, Damien, that it is important for our president to understand that the coronavirus is still a living threat, and he's not really focusing upon that because, as we see today, we have a campaign rally for President Trump happening on June 20th.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're having him go to these high centricity places, which are very, very vulnerable to the coronavirus and amassing very, very high amounts of people in one situation, in one location. And knowing the Trump fan base and the amount of people who are supporting his campaign, I'm sure a lot of them are not going to be wearing masks, following in their president's footsteps. So what can the president do to make people safe, if there's anything he can do?
Well, you know, I think I always... I would make fun of the president because they'd always say that that Sleepy Joe isn't on the campaign trail and that he's going to lose because he's not on the campaign trail, because he's not campaigning, because he's hiding in his basement. But I think what they were really upset about was the fact that Mr., you know, Sleepy Joe was actually doing very well, and he was being seen as a leader because he wasn't out there campaigning. You know, he was trying to do what he could virtually, as many Americans had to do, and I think that it's the fair thing to do. I think that it might be a little bit irresponsible to have the president throwing these huge campaigns and then he's telling people not more than 10 people at an event. So it's difficult. It's a difficult time. I think that he needs to be a little bit more mature and a little bit more responsible. And I think that if Joe Biden was doing the same thing, that I'd have the same perspective on what he's doing. But I think the president a little bit more so. You know, the president, obviously, no disrespect to him in this matter because of his age, but he is an older man and he does attract an older audience with more conservative views. That's usually the case. You know, you tend to have a little bit of an older audience. So I think that, you know, he could be putting his constituents at risk because of his ignorance, and he's kind of feeding their ignorance. You know, that's something that you don't want to have, and that's something that I disagree with. You know, feeding any type of ignorance or feeding any type of whether it's mental health or a weight problem, you shouldn't really feed into that, and you should try to help people see the other side of it. And I don't necessarily know if the president's doing that.
Absolutely. No, Damien, I agree completely, because what I see the president doing is being selfish.
Yeah.
Whereas thousands and thousands of protesters in the streets, they're sacrificing their kind of health, not for a campaign rally, but for the health of our nation, which I think it's being selfless instead of selfish, but a campaign rally is completely selfish. And we're seeing Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe, as you mentioned, he's not holding campaign rallies, whereas Trump is. But a couple of weeks ago, while Trump was in his bunker, kind of bunkered down because of the protests that were going on, Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe, and Nancy Pelosi were in these streets with protesters risking their health for a much bigger cause than their own campaign, but the health of our nation. definitely goes to show that whereas Trump is being very selfish in this manner and not going into the streets with the protesters to show his strength and his courage in this crisis, I've seen Joe Biden risk his health both, you know, from people who are coming out to get him and from the coronavirus, going out and showing this kind of embodied stance. So how do you feel about the contrast between these both candidates who are coming into our 2020 election?
You know, I think that it's a very stark contrast. I think that it's a stark contrast on the terms of on leadership, and I don't think that it should be. I think that they should be on the same grounds, and that shouldn't be something that you're looking at. I think that you should see, you know, I often look back to, I think maybe, and definitely in my lifetime, you know, short lifetime, but definitely in my lifetime, I think the best candidates that we've ever had for president was in the 2008 election, where you had John McCain and Barack Obama. And one thing that you never questioned on either half was their leadership. You never wondered, is this person a good leader? And I think that that's a question that's being brought on today. I think that a question in past elections has been, are they the best leader compared to the other person? But right now we're even asking, are they a leader in general? And it's disappointing, and I think that it's going to show up in November, hopefully, as more and more Americans go out and make sure that their voice is heard. I think that we might have some record numbers here. But on that topic, you know, on the topic of the election, who do you think that Joe Biden's going to choose as his running mate?
You know what? I am not 100% sure. He did say he was going to pick a woman for his running mate, running against Bernie Sanders going into the election. I'm excited to see who he picks. First of all, I do think that Stacey Abrams would be somewhat of a good pick. Honestly, I'm not sure. You know, Joe Biden is a man of campaign, at least is a campaign of good judgment. And I think they'll do what is fit for their election and pick a good candidate. How about you, Damien? Who do you think he's going to pick?
I think that he's going to pick a woman that has risen above all in recent weeks, and a woman that has always had my respect, even though I don't necessarily live in the area where she is in power. Apologies if you can hear the cows in the background. But I think that it's going to be the mayor of Atlanta. I think that it's going to be Keisha Lance Bottoms. I think that I hope. I think that would be a very good decision. You know, a woman of color, obviously, and then, you know, a woman in general and a strong leader and someone that's been looked up to on both sides of the aisle as a good leader. I guess my worry is, and I don't know if you want to feed into this or if you want to talk about it, but my worry is if he picks someone who's too far on the left, you know, I have my opinions on whether Hillary also lost because of the fact that she's a woman. I don't necessarily know if America's ready for a female president. It's something that's unfortunate to say, but in my opinion, I don't know if America in whole, in 2016 at least, I mean, I think maybe now we with the whole political change that's happening, we might be ready for a woman or for a female president. But I don't know if necessarily that'll hurt him if he picks a female running mate.
You know what? I think it's not going to hurt him. I did see a lot of long shots for the VP shot, especially Keisha Lance Bottoms and many, many other people who are at the bottom of the list rise because of their status as Black POCs and women. But I do think that women, it would not hurt his campaign chances. First of all, it's 2020. We're having so many discussions as Americans about POCs, about women, about LGBT rights, and I think we're in a very, very high state of acceptance, and we're a mature nation as we go. But I do also think that America, we see Joe Biden as a quintessential white male. You know, he's the kind of person that has been winning our elections for many, 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 many years. And I think that he is the kind of prime example of what Americans are looking for in a president in terms of race, of gender. But I think having a VP like Keisha Lance Bottoms, who is a POC and a woman, stark contrast, and it does provide a very, very good kind of, I don't know how to explain
balance,
it, but
I think.
There we go. That's my word.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to agree with you. I think that hopefully America has matured, and hopefully that won't necessarily affect him. I personally don't think that it will. But, you know, it's interesting to see how politics are playing out today. You know, I was thinking the whole time that you were talking that that America's looking for a politician now. But in 2016, a lot of people believe that Trump won because, you know, oh, we're tired of the politicians. And you have that kind of a little bit of a change. I think it happens every couple of years where people come out and say, I'm not a politician, I'm an American. Or they'll come out and say different things. I think that... That's a good stance. I think that a lot of the times it's BS, and I think that with Donald Trump we did get someone who's not a politician whatsoever. I think that we got a class A American for sure in a lot of respects. But I think that it might be funny to see how Americans from now on go, you know, we don't want to do that again, and we might just stick to politicians from now on. I think that that there is a reason that they have chosen to go into the field that they did, and I think that might make Kanye's election gig in 2024 a little bit more difficult, but I don't see us swaying away from politicians anymore. I mean, we gave Richard Nixon a shot, we saw that win, and we're giving Donald Trump a shot, and we're seeing how that's going. But I think that it's safe to say that we're going to be sticking to politicians for a couple of elections.
On the topic of Kanye West, I completely forgot, Damien. I was going to mention this on our last podcast with Will, but Kanye West may have faked his support for Donald Trump earlier on in the last couple of years in 2016's election because he wanted to free his black counterparts from jail and kind of introduce more policies to POCs in our community. I did see many of his friends go online and say, you know, Kanye has been very, very supportive of the Democratic Party ever since he's endorsed Trump and not made any moves to kind of support Trump after the 2016 election. I think that Kanye may have supported Trump earlier in 2016 because he wanted to sway policy towards POCs, which I believe is very, very respectable. It's a backdoor route to increasing acceptance for POCs in our nation, but it is a route nonetheless. And I think that it does show that Kanye and many, many other people are ready for true change in our nation. But on the topic that I was going to mention earlier today, Tucker Carlson was actually boycotted by many, many, many agencies. I know you heard about that, Damien. It's all over Twitter right now. But how do you feel about Tucker Carlson being boycotted and his show being boycotted for any ads?
You know, I think again, this goes back to a question of how America is. You know, we were talking about a little bit earlier with people with Drew Brees and, you know, people being able to express their freedom of speech. I think that it goes to a certain extent. I think that we saw, you know, unfortunately in our county that we call home, we saw freedom of speech being taken to a point beyond forgiveness with the statements that were being yelled at protesters. And I think in certain circumstances, you have to really say enough is enough. And we've been misjudging that with situations such as Colin Kaepernick. And I think that in certain respect, we misjudged it a little bit with Drew Brees. I think that obviously his statements were out of character and they were out of line. But I think Drew Brees has had a history of being a good person, so that his career shouldn't end. What I'm trying to say here is people's career shouldn't end off of one mistake. You know, these are people that are in the spotlight often. But unfortunately with Tucker Carlson, this isn't his first rodeo with controversy. You know, he's made bad statements, he's made bad takes, and I think that this is something that's overdue. You know, you saw the hashtag I stand with Tucker. I clicked on it and I was like, I can't believe that this is real, but I think what a lot of people were tweeting was making fun of the hashtag I stand with Tucker, as opposed to actually standing with Tucker Carlson. I think that this is a circumstance where you're saying capitalism, you know, something that the right talks about a lot. Capitalism do its thing, where you're seeing companies coming out and doing what they think is going to be best for their company. And that's something that you know, as opposed to in certain circumstances where you have companies drop out because of the harassment that they get due to someone's statements, where you have them on Twitter telling, you know, let's, for example, I guess Coca-Cola to drop someone because they made a racist statement. It usually happens because of harassment on Twitter. But here the company literally dropped out before I think a lot of people were aware of it. And the part of the story was that the sponsors pulled out, not necessarily that the sponsors were pulling out because of the controversy. What do you think?
I think that it also, I was going to mention a point earlier on this topic, and it recently came to mind. I think that we're discussing so much, you and I, Damien, about the American people and our First Amendment rights and our free speech rights, but also we need to consider that companies and their CEOs and their corporate board also have the First Amendment rights and they have their opinions. I think that these companies coming out and kind of taking their ads off the Tucker Carlson show does show that people are beginning to manifest their First Amendment and their opinions through companies. We're seeing many of these companies coming out and doing things like these, and I think it's a good thing for America. It's kind of giving birth to a more mature and a more politically active corporate America. And everything in America right now, Damien, is very, very centric around politics. We're seeing sports around politics, the news around politics, obviously. We're seeing corporations around politics, shopping around politics. I think that it goes to show that America is going through a very, very rough time. Also, a time that we can blossom through. You know, we can come out a greater nation through this. And I think it depends on how we choose to look at it.
Yeah, for sure. What is your stance though on you know, oftentimes you see people push to have sponsors removed because of someone's statements, and you know the companies are kind of forced into not endorsing a certain figure. But in this circumstance, what's your opinion on the fact that this is a little bit different, where the companies literally did it before I think a lot of people were even aware of what he had said, if I'm not mistaken?
I think it goes to show that the companies are trying to gain the support of the people. No matter what the people say, I think the companies are coming out and saying, how do I gain the support of the population, of the masses? I think it goes to show that marketing officials and strategists, and being a business person, I obviously know a lot of things that go on in the inside of businesses. But I think that these marketing officials are saying, how am I going to increase revenue? And it's not through advertising on a show that brings a lot of controversy, but it's on advertising and shows that introduce new policies, new discussions, and more peaceful discussions that are not bashing the BLM movement, as Tucker Carlson has been cited for saying multiple times. I think that these companies are going out and analyzing these shows and analyzing their advertising avenues and saying, which is the most beneficial for my company? You know, at the end of the day, Damien, it is not about the people. It is not about politics. It is simply about making the money that these companies want to make. And I think that they will go through anything to achieve that kind of money, and that's my standpoint. You know, it's controversial, but that's my standpoint.
Hey, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Yeah, I think you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about a certain circumstance where we were facing, and I said the quote, you know, some people just got to get that bread, and I think that in America we have the privilege of being able to go out and make our own money, and I don't think that it's something that should be frowned upon. I think that if it involves acceptance, whether it's because of the money, it's something that we should look onto. Now, I want to go back a little bit and on something that you said earlier. That stuck in my mind to end today's podcast, because we're a little bit over the 1 hour mark right now. I want to talk a little bit about it. You know, Kanye in 2016. There's been a lot of kind of questions being raised about what he was doing endorsing Donald Trump. And you know, obviously, there's the theory that you brought up, where it was because he wanted to have a you know, people of color being represented more fairly in America, so he was kind of playing buddy buddy with him. I think that if that is the case, that would be only a testament to how intellectual Kanye West really is. But I think with what he's come out and said in past years is the reason that he really wore the MAGA hat was to show that you know, he had tweets at the time, and I think that this is something that I respect Kanye a lot for. You know, I think that he did it irresponsibly, but I think that I can see the greater message in what he was doing. And this is something that I want to leave our viewers off with today as we wrap up the episode. But he said that that a lot of people are afraid to just say something. And so he went out and said something that he didn't even agree with. To, you know, he wore the MAGA hat to show that you need to be, that you might have free speech, but you're a slave to your own thoughts. And, you know, that's something that that he's quoted as saying, you have free speech, but you're a slave. Your thoughts are slaves. And it's a very powerful statement. I think that we need to all, as Americans, you know, take a little bit of a page out of Kanye's book, in the sense that we need to be willing to say what we're saying, not because other people are saying it. And, you know, Kanye, obviously, he made his point valid by the backlash that he faced from the black community and pop culture in general. I think that that only went to strengthen his argument that people are scared of saying what they believe, and he was standing up for, you know, for people that are scared to voice their opinion by making a statement that he didn't necessarily agree with and knowing that he was going to face backlash. I think it's respectable, and I think that that's something that we all need to do. We need to all be willing to voice our opinions in the hope of creating conversation and not argument.
I think it's very powerful, Damien, what you said over there. I think we need to follow in Kanye's example and to make the sacrifices that we need to make for our country to prosper, because we are, as I said earlier, we are all Americans above everything. And I think that being a political teens, politically active teens, it's important for us to understand that there's a bigger party than us. No, it is we over me in any circumstance. My basketball team used to use that quote in our jerseys, we over me, and I think it applies here too. It's we over me, it's America over me, and that's what we're seeing protesters across the nation doing. It is America over me and risking their lives and their health with the American system of policing and the American way of life. So I think that we should end today's podcast with that thing. You know, we over me is a thing that we should all as Americans stand for. And I wanted to end again, as we always wrap up the show, by saying, you know, start a healthy conversation with your peers and your family this weekend. And, you know, it's our last podcast for the week. Start a healthy conversation about politics and look into your politics more and become more politically minded students and people across all borders. I think it's important for all of us to keep educated and keep engaged in the political system. Obviously, follow our Twitter at Polititeen Show and email us at polititeenpodcast@gmail.com for any interview opportunities or campaign team opportunities or questions for me or Damien as your co-host. So I wanted to say, you know, peace out to our Polititeen family from the both of us, and we'll catch you next Monday.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, we want to thank you guys for the mass support that we've gotten as we're wrapping up the second week of the show. It's been incredible. It's been an incredible journey, and we're really hopeful for the future of the show, both me and Varun, and that's really a thank you to you guys. You know that we wouldn't be able to have these aspirations if we weren't seeing the support that we're getting. It's really incredible, and it's something that we didn't expect. You know, we're doing the show because this is something that we genuinely love, but seeing that it's affecting you guys and seeing that it's creating conversation amongst the youth, I think that it's something that's very inspirational to both me and Varun. Now, with that being said, we're going to wrap up this second week, obviously, of Politicast. This is Friday, June 12th. It is 11:30 Central Standard Time. It is 12:30 where we usually shoot from in Atlanta. But we want to thank everyone for tuning in. Unfortunately, you know, we did have a little bit of some technical difficulties here. And hopefully you guys do get this episode. We get everything resolved. Obviously no live stream. But this was a really good episode, really good conversation, and we think that you guys should go out and create this conversation. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. That's going to be it from both me and Varun. Good night, guys.
Hello, everybody. A couple of updates for you guys before we end the sixth installment of the Polititeen podcast. Next Monday, we're going to have a candidate for DeKalb Super 6 Commissioner and Ted Terry coming in and talking to you guys about current issues, and a Democratic candidate for Georgia House District 26 and Krista Olenzak coming in and talking to you guys about many, many current issues. And the week after, we have a very, very busy schedule. You know, we're going to have Charles Ravenscraft for, you know, House District 22 coming in and talking to you guys again about the issues that America itself has been facing. So a bunch of exciting news for our campaign and our podcast over the next couple of weeks. And we hope you guys stay tuned for our podcast next Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And as always, follow our Twitter at Polititeen Show and email us at polititeenpodcast@gmail.com with any questions or feedback for Damien and myself. Once again, have a great, great, great weekend, and peace out, our Polititeen family.